I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on the wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight. Inside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight inside me. Some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight inside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight inside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight inside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fight inside of me. And that's the name of this program here on resistanceradio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this past week or so, being an absolute orgy of censorship and deplatforming and banning at both Facebook and YouTube, particularly YouTube. It's YouTube now has a new policy and a new censorship policy, and let's be very clear about it. That's exactly what it is. And it's announced with some fanfare this past week that they're going to be banning, well, in addition to white supremacy, whatever that is, and white nationalism, whatever that is, dangerous content, extreme content. And this is YouTube's new policy, which was announced on June the 5th. There have already been victims. Brother Nathaniel lost 150 videos when he was deplatformed. He's now moved to BitChute. So in the end, these videos will be up there and available. But anyway, this is the official statement from the YouTube team, anonymous, of course. Over the past years, we've been investing in policies, resources, and products needed to live up to our responsibility and protect the YouTube community from harmful content. What about letting adults decide what's some of this is just the most incredible bureaucracies. This work has focused on four pillars: removing violative content, raising up authoritative content, reducing the spread of borderline content, and rewarding trusted creators. In other words, promoting politically correct information. We've been taking a closer look at our approach toward hateful content in consultation with dozens of experts in subjects like violent extremism, supremacism, civil rights, and free speech. Well, probably not many experts in free speech. Supremacism, what type of, like Jewish supremacism, you know, like Zionism? That's okay. Anyway, the statement goes on. Removing more hateful and supremacist content. YouTube has always had rules of the road, including a long-standing policy against hate speech. Now, this is where, you know, under this loosey-goosey, vague term, anything can be banned. What is hate speech? Can you define hate speech? Well, a lot of people have trouble doing that. What hate speech is speech that the accuser hates. If somebody says, that's hate speech, what they mean is they don't like it. Okay. We've introduced a tougher stance toward videos with supremacist content, including limiting recommendations and features like comments and the ability to share the video. This is censorship. Let's be quite clear about it. Supremacist content. This step dramatically reduced views of these videos on average 80%. So really what they're trying to do is to choke off access to ideas. Today we're taking another step in our hate speech policy by specifically prohibiting videos alleging that a group is superior in order to justify discrimination, segregation, or exclusion based on qualities like age, gender, race, caste, religion, sexual orientation, or veteran status. Okay, let me put it this way. Supposing I said, I do not want a homosexual child care worker dealing with a little boy under the age of 5, let's say, in a daycare center. I don't want that. Okay, let me see. That would be saying that heterosexual is better than homosexual, and there would be some form of discrimination, even though I'm not suggesting that would have to be by law. I guess a video that would contain a view like that might be banned. Or, then they go on to say, this would include, for example, videos that promote or glorify Nazi ideology. Promote or glorify Nazi. So it really is political censorship. Nothing there about glorifying communism, glorifying, let's say, Che Guevara or Fidel Castro or the Communist Revolution. No. Which is inherently discriminatory, they say. Well, actually, communism is too. Not very much fun if you happen to be a landlord. Finally, we will remove content that well-documented violent events like the Holocaust or the shooting of Sandy Hook took place. So, if you question the establishment media view about Sandy Hook, your video goes down. Now, as a matter of fact, I'm not persuaded that Sandy Hook was false. If pushed, I would probably say, I kind of more or less believe the mainstream media story, but I would never be in favor of removing videos of the question that. Or, of course, well-documented violent events like the Holocaust. Well, wait a second. That's the problem. there's a big argument and a big debate as to whether it happened, what the numbers were, was there ever an order? In other words, this is wholesale censorship of political views. And I'll tell you, the reason is, especially in the case of the Hollywood version of World War II, there's a group that has a vested interest in it. It's great for keeping people guilty and making them easier to control. It's great for giving Israel a quick pass on whatever it does. That of course serves a particular interest. It also serves an interest in keeping Europeans guilty and vulnerable to being manipulated. So if indeed the Hollywood version is incorrect, or substantially incorrect, should we not have the right to discuss it? Well, according to YouTube, you will not. It will no longer have that right. And you know, it wouldn't be the first time that the perpetrators of a massacre have blamed other people. For instance, when the Soviets smashed into Poland in 1940, they massacred the cream of the Polish officer corps at a place called Katyn, and they didn't bury them very well. Basically, they're open graves that were not buried very, very deeply. They denounced the National Socialists. They denounced Germany as having perpetrated this. And as late as the Nuremberg trials, that was still on the bill of indictment against National Socialist Germany, that they perpetrated it. Well, it turned out, and there was enough evidence that the Germans had gathered, and any serious historian would now agree that the massacre at Katyn was perpetrated by the Soviets, by the Soviet communists. Now, can you see the problem? If you cannot discuss, supposedly, you know, and what is well documented? Well, well documented is what we say it is. And here is a further part of the statement from YouTube. Finally, it's critical that our monetization system rewards trusted creators who add value to YouTube. We have long-standing advertiser-friendly guidelines that prohibit ads from running on videos that include hateful content, and we enforce them rigorously. You see, people who post on YouTube can make a small amount of money if they allow advertising, and for each click, they get a very small amount of money. Well, that's one of the things that's been done recently, or in the last, actually since Charlottesville, the demonetizing of even videos that were still allowed. And in order to protect our ecosystem of creators, advertisers, and viewers, we tightened our advertising criteria in 2017. In the case of hate speech, we are strengthening enforcement of our existing YouTube partner program policies. Channels that repeatedly brush up against our hate speech policies will be suspended from the YouTube partner program, meaning they can't run ads on their channel or use other monetization features like Super Chat. The YouTube, of course, has absolutely lined up with censorship, unashamedly so. And as I was suggesting in an interview a little while ago today on the Brian Roos show, we must call them on that. We may have to suffer under this for a while. We may have to maneuver around it using alternatives like BitChute and others. But we're going to have to never, ever, ever let them get out from the the bag of doo-doo that we must hang around their neck for being censors. That's what they are. They can't have it both ways. Okay, well, who's cheering them on? You have any guesses, perhaps? Yep. The ADL, Anti-Defamation League. But you say, if you make the accusation that there's significant Jewish power in the United States, well, you're a anti-Semite. Never mind the name calling. Is it true or not? Well, okay. Here's from the New York Times on June the 5th. The ADL, that's the Anti-Defamation League, issued a statement regarding the YouTube policy changes to reduce extremist content, including white supremacy, conspiracy theories, and Holocaust denialism. That's what extremist content is, not communism, not hatred of white people or white males or heterosexuals. No. So extremist content is white supremacy, conspiracy theories. Here's the statement from a Jonathan Greenblatt, who is the CEO and national director. He says, online, hate and extremism pose a significant threat, weaponizing bigotry against marginalized communities, silencing voices through intimidation, and acting as recruiting tool for hateful fringe groups, says Jonathan Greenblatt. Okay, well, now, when you get right down to it, he's got a problem with democracy. That is what political and other groups with points of view have always done. They put their ideas out there with the view of recruiting people to their view. That's democracy, and people. Some people will listen to that, what they have to say, and say, I think it's nonsense. Others will say, I want to think about that. Others will say, I'm convinced. Well, the ADL is not in favor of that. So online hate and extremism is a significant threat, is it? Hate. Well, as we've already said, hate is a loosey-goosey term that is kind of hard to pin down. It's really something the accuser hates. Extremism. Oh, what's extremism? You know, I use this example on the Brian Roos Show. traditional Christians would say that to counteract venereal, or sometimes they're called sexually transmitted diseases, like HIV or AIDS, etc., celibacy is the best policy. In fact, that's traditional Christian teaching. There should be sexual celibacy until marriage. And if there's sexual, if there's fidelity within the marriage, these illnesses can rage around you and they will not affect you. Okay, now, that's the traditional Christian teaching. Is that extremism? Well, I don't know. I think, though, many people today would say, well, it's maybe highly idealistic and not very practical. Does that make it extremist? I don't know. But, you know, when you talk about extremism, that very much is a point of view. Anyway, the statement goes on, weaponizing bigotry against marginalized community. Okay. Be very careful before you accept a particular community is, quote, marginalized. Bigotry. Well, that basically is negative feelings. Maybe sometimes the negative feelings are justified. Marginalized communities. Well, I'll tell you what, two groups that say they're marginalized are the LGBTQ types and the Jews. So how are the LGBTQ people marginalized? Well, they're not marginalized. They've got the power. They're the ones who have forced same-sex marriage in recognition in much of the United States, certainly in Canada, much of Western Europe. The transgendered agenda that is moving along, putting Christian preachers under huge fines like Bill Watcott, or even possible jail time. They're not marginalized. But part of the act is they say, oh, we're so vulnerable, we're marginalized. No, they're not marginalized. They're the ones running things. But it's a great scamorama. You're in control, but you say, we're so poor and helpless. It's a good act. And, of course, the past masters at this is the Jewish lobby. They say, "Oh, we're a vulnerable, we're a marginalized community." Well, what do you mean, marginalized? It's their lobbying and agitation that brings about this type of censorship of dissident ideas. They're not marginalized; they're in control. The American Israel First policy in the Middle East, whether it's a Republican or a Democratic president sitting in the White House, is a direct result of the huge financial power, media power, and lobbying power of the Zionist lobby in Washington. There's scarcely a congressman who would vote against an appropriation of yet more foreign aid or arms aid being shoveled to Israel. Why? Well, because they would soon find themselves denounced as, yeah, you got it, anti-Semitic in the local poodle press media. Their reputation would be slammed. They might very well not get reelected or not even get renominated by their party. That happened to even such a powerful man as Senator J. William Fulbright back in the 1970s. He'd been a strong segregationist, but he'd also been a somewhat time critic of Israel. Well, the Zionist lobby, unable to budge him, finally funded a Republican opponent, and he became one of the first Republicans to be elected to the Senate from the Deep South since Reconstruction. Even as powerful and as long-standing a senator as J. William Fulbright could be replaced, and believe me, that lesson was not lost on other politicians. If this could happen to Fulbright, who was very strong, well-known, and was in a state that hardly ever elected a Republican statewide office, what could happen to them? So, and here's part of the old scamorama. They continue to portray themselves as vulnerable. We're weak. They're not. They're the ones with the power. Okay, this is the ADL statement. So, online hate and extremism pose a significant threat against marginalized communities. Silencing voices through intimidation. And silencing voices, this is another accusation they like to make, and it's part of the scam. Silencing voices. You see, if I speak up, I silence people who disagree with me by my very presence. This is the argument. Let's analyze that accusation. It's said that articles critical or statements or videos critical of, let's say, Israel or the role of Jews in American or Canadian or world politics silence people. ADL didn't seem to be very silenced. It's making statements and pushing for more and more censorship, pushing quite effectively for more censorship. How are they silenced? Do the various brain jackasses who reflect their point of view in the mainstream media, are they silenced? No. There's no silencing at all. I'll tell you who are silenced or marginalized. It's people with populist points of view. That they're the people who are silenced. So it's an interesting part of this game that is being played. That at the very time that you're beating up your free speech supporters or taking away people's rights, you claim all the way that you're a victim. I'm a victim. I'm a victim of hate. Meanwhile, you're silencing people. That's what they're doing. Okay, the statement goes on to say, that's why the ADL has been working with technology companies, including YouTube, to aggressively counter hate on their platforms. In other words, we've been lobbying the heck out of these people to censor ideas we don't agree with. And well, that much is true. That's what they certainly have been doing. Wait a sec. But they're a marginalized, almost silenced community. You know, they've got to be called on their, well, what's a nice term for bullshit? I guess. Bullshit, right? We were glad to share our expertise on this and look forward to continuing to provide our input. Yes, I'm sure they will be. Anyway, that was the ADL. So basically, their grubby hands are all over this latest attack on free thought and free speech. And, you know, they've got to be held to it. And this is something that, you know, we may not have a lot of power, but we must hang this around their necks, that this is what they have done, and we must never let them have a pretend to be for freedom of speech. Well, there's been another South African murder. This is the full story of the brutal murder of Stefan Smit on his farm in Stellenbosch. This is a video recording where these land grabbers actually threatened to kill him almost a year ago. So I'm going to play a little bit of this video. This is another white South African farmer murdered by out-of-control thugs. Some of them with the tacit approval of some of the people in the regime. This is the full story behind the brutal murders.
Hello everybody, Willem Petzer here. Today we'll be talking about Stefan Smit. For those of you who do not know who that is the farmer that has been murdered 2 days ago on his wine estate in Stellenbosch, South Africa. Now this is a very high profile case and was reported on by many international media houses, including the New York Times, the Daily Mail from the UK, and Fox News, particularly Tucker Carlson. But what makes this video very important and why I believe it is important to share this video far and wide is the fact that there are some things that were not reported in any of these media outlets, particularly one of these land grabbers threatening on camera to a news organization how this farmer should be killed. I have in my possession this video and it will be played in this video a little bit later. But first, if you're interested in South Africa, on this channel we do analysis and stories about what's happening in South Africa and try to give the objective truth. So if you're interested in that, be sure to subscribe. Now Tucker Carlson, one of the most popular TV hosts in the United States of America, has done quite a few stories already on South Africa's farm murders, but as far as my knowledge goes, this was the first time after this event that Tucker Carlson actually said that these farm killings in South Africa are racial hate crimes.
Last summer we told you about the plight of farmers in South Africa. Hundreds of them have been killed in recent years, some after suffering horrific torture. Instead of protecting the farmers, the government of South Africa has worked to change its country's laws in order to seize their land without compensation. Skin color is a central motivation here. Nobody denies that. Let's be clear about what's happening. This is racist violence, as brutal and horrifying and indefensible as anything that happened under apartheid. The difference is at this time, the Western media are cheering it on.
Tucker, however, did not have this particular video or was not aware of this particular video when he talked about these issues on TV. Take a look at this video from News 24 when one of these particular land grabbers on Stefan Smit's farm said that it doesn't matter if the owner has to die in the process, they will take this land. This is shocking that these things are normalized, that people can say stuff like they don't care if the farmer has to die in the process or the owner has to die in the process, and nobody says anything about it, nobody does anything about it, and then almost a year later, the exact same farmer that was threatened to kill gets killed. Now, Stefan Smit has been threatened quite a few times because of this whole land grab story on his farm. He testified of receiving a lot of death threats, including one where the threatener threatened to burn him alive. Then, 2 days ago, when him and his wife and a visitor from Switzerland were eating in his farmhouse, four armed men walked into the farmhouse and shot him dead. Tucker Carlson actually calls out the media on their obvious bias when reporting farm murders in South Africa. He said it in much more harsh words than I would. but take a look at this short excerpt from his show.
Bloomberg has published articles suggesting that race-based land seizures will somehow supercharge the South African economy, when of course the opposite is true. Zimbabwe tried that and became the poorest country in the world. But whatever, nobody in American journalism wants to hear about it. Last year, the New York Times called this show immoral for even suggesting that farm murders might be a problem. But there's one problem for the Times: their own interview subjects are getting murdered. Just this past March, the Times profiled a South African farmer called Stephen Smit. Smit's land had been overrun by a mob that built a shanty town and refused to leave. Smit told the newspaper that he'd received death threats, including a threat to, quote, burn him alive. He said he'd been intimidated into selling his land to local government officials. The article featured quotes from political activists openly attacking Smit on the basis of his skin color. Despite that, the Times once again concluded that it's, quote, false to say that farm murders are a real problem. Well, yesterday, four men broke into Smith's home while he was having dinner with his family. They shot him dead, and then they left. His was the second farm murder in the Western Cape province in the last month. According to the New York Times, they deserved it.
The brutal farm murders in South Africa and the torture that goes with it does not receive as much media attention as one would have thought. It does not, quite frankly, receive enough media attention from the local or international media as it deserves. So we are very thankful that many of these international media houses have decided to report on this particular case. Now also, just less than a year ago, round about just after Mr. Smith's farm was invaded, the President of South Africa, Cyril Ramaphosa, said the following. He said that there are no land grabs happening in South Africa and there are no white farmers being murdered in South Africa, even though in the week that he said that, six farmers were murdered in South Africa and there were quite a few land grabs going on at the very same time.
And whoever gave him that information was completely wrong. There are no killings of farmers or white farmers in South Africa. There's no land grab in South Africa.
It is astounding that the president can lie so blatantly and think anyone will believe him, but he did that. Luckily, we have alternative means, social media, to get the message out there. So please be sure to share this far and wide. Also, if you are interested in receiving regular updates from this channel on WhatsApp, be sure to send your name and preferred language on WhatsApp to +27 71567 7162. Have a good day, goodbye, and God bless.
That was a very powerful a report from South Africa on land grabs and on what's happening to South African farmers. Well, I wanted to take a quick look at one of the latest policies from the trust fund kid. This is, of course, the Canadian Prime Minister, and of course it's part of enforcing the LGBTQ agenda and trying to reshape or distort reality. And this is headlined, Justin Trudeau bans the use of mother and father within government organizations. We are truly living in an Orwellian world of insanity. Canadian government employees tasked with connecting citizens to government services can no longer refer to those citizens as sir or madam or any other gender-specific term. While doing so, Service Canada's frontline staff must use gender-neutral language or gender-inclusive language to avoid portraying a perceived bias toward a particular sex or gender, out of respect for the country's diverse population. In other words, to make accommodation to a tiny minority of freaks. Now, get this. Frontline staff must use gender-neutral language or gender-inclusive language to avoid portraying a perceived bias toward a particular sex or gender. Well, if a man comes to a counter and I'm dealing with that person, would I, why can I not say, you know, yes, sir, I think I can help, or yes, ma'am, if it's a lady. Well, how is that a bias toward a gender? I mean, I recognize a person for what they are. Anyway, the forbidden terms include mother, father, sir, madam, Mr., Mrs., and Miss. Instead, workers are directed to call people parents, use their full names, and ask them how they wish to be addressed. They're further warned that an in-person quality monitoring program will watch them for compliance with the new rules. In other words, they'll be spied upon. not to put too fine a gloss on it. They'll be spied upon by the government. So they're not supposed to use the terms mother and father. So you see a little child who might be wandering around lost, and you say, where is your mother? No, or you see a woman approaching, and you ask a little child, is that your mother over there? Well, it's obviously not their father. Maybe it's not their mother either, but... So I guess you're supposed to say, is that your parent over there? Poor little five-year-old, I mean, I've heard that term before. Doesn't know what to answer. Use their full names, I guess, if you know them. These actions bring up versions of the behavior of totalitarian governments of history. Social visionary George Orwell wrote about word manipulation in his famous work, 1984. Under the leadership of Justin Trudeau, this has become a reality within the 2019 Canadian society. Our current government is fixated on terminology. Border jumpers are not illegals, they are just irregular migrants. It's not a carbon tax, but rather a price on pollution. Now government implement changes to create punitive measures for those using commonplace language have become a part of Western culture for 1,000 years. This from a former drama teacher and former snowboard instructor. Canada's LGBT, that's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered industry is one of the most draconian social movements in modern history. They're, in fact, pushy as hell. They stop at nothing to get mainstream and heterosexual Canadians to bow to their will. Did you know it's now permissible for authorities to bust into a person's home and take their child from them if the parent opposes their desire to change their sex? A gang of pink-brown shirts, no? Mother, father, Mr., Mrs., sir, madam, say no go. Justin has banned all these terms and more within Service Canada. What's next? The same when speaking in public? A hefty fine for wishing the person who gave us life a happy Mother's Day? Perhaps a phrase often used within social conservative circles best sums up the liberal globalist ethos. Behind every liberal is a communist screaming to get out. Cultural Action Party of Canada cannot think of a person who fits this profile more than the Prime Minister of our nation, Justin Trudeau. And this is from Brad Salzberg, who happens to be the president of the Cultural Action Party of Canada. Another really severe threat to free thought and freedom of speech. And you know, it's something that has to be absolutely, vigorously challenged. And for the nonsense and the manipulative nonsense it is, all of which is to accommodate a small number of freaks. Justin Trudeau now controls social media content, fines for violations, and at least that's what he'd like. Justin Trudeau said his government would hold companies to account for fake news and that they have to make major improvements or they would face meaningful financial consequences. He said social platforms were failing their users. In typical Trudeau speak, the man consistently turns issues inside out in this fashion. Social media giants are not failing their users. They're failing Justin Trudeau by exposing the rot Canada's pseudo-dictator does not want citizens to become aware of. Trudeau wants conservatives, patriots, nationalists, and various dissenters to lose their voice within society. During the China's Cultural Revolution, Mao Zedong shut down dissenters by way of violence. We live in a different era, of course, but apart from methodology, Trudeau is replicating the dictator's behavior. It should come as no surprise. Trudeau's political idols are not Canadian prime ministers of history or leaders in the development of liberty and freedom of speech rights within Western society. Rather, his admiration is directed toward Chairman Mao, Fidel Castro, and leading communist figures in the former USSR. His brother, Sacha, is named after one of those revolutionaries. As the October election approaches this year, Prime Minister Trudeau is taking desperate measures to gain victory for a second term. His virtue signaling is fraudulent, when isn't it? What he's really after is to establish himself as dictator of Canada in a similar manner to a close family friend, in his quotation, his comments, Fidel Castro. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. I got to take my musical break right now, and I'm going to play something from a historic night from the Grand Ole Opry with Waylon Jennings, Travis Tritt, and Joe Diffie. And this is from my gosh.
There's no such thing as a perfect writer. This is why I use Grammarly to check my work.
If I'm putting commas in the wrong place.
It's Saturday night in Nashville, Tennessee, and time for another big half hour of Grand Ole Opry Live here on the National Network. Hi, everybody. I'm Keith Gobry. If you've been watching backstage, you know what a treat you're in for. A guitar pull to end all guitar pulls. We've got Joe Diffie, Travis Tritt, Steve Warner, and the legendary Waylon Jennings all on stage at once to play some great music. Just going to pass the guitar around and have a great time here at the Grand Ole Opry tonight. It's going to be very special. So stay with us. Hey, there's Joe Diffie right now. The back of Joe Diffie's head. Where'd you get your hair cut, son? Well, come on. Who else? No, we're going to have a great time tonight. So sit back and relax and get ready for a great half hour of great music here on the Nashville Network on the Grand Ole Opry. You're seeing a half hour portion of a 2.5 hour show, but it's going to be mighty special tonight. So we invite you to not miss one single solitary minute. Now, the host of all this gathering is a fella you know well. He's a legend here at the Grand Ole Opry and in country music. He's the tall, thin man from West Plains, Missouri, a legend in his own right, Mr. Porter Wagner. So we're going to go, I think he's out in the audience, as a matter of fact. We're going to go check with Porter right now. Let's go out there, and he'll introduce all the participants tonight. Here's Porter Wagner.
Thank you, folks. We have a little miscommunication here, I believe. The curtain is supposed to be back down until I introduce the show, ladies and gentlemen. And while we're getting our guest in place, if you will lower the curtain back down, we done see part of them out here. This is it. Thank you. We didn't rehearse that but four times, so we got it right now. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a special night at the Grand Ole Opry. When this curtain goes up the next time, you'll see and hear four of the greatest country singers in country music today. And it's a real thrill and a very special moment for me to invite four of my great friends. And I want you all to let them know how happy you are that they are here tonight. Travis Tritt, Waylon Jennings, Joe Diffie, and Steve Allen.
Oh, man. Hey, buddy. Thank you, Porter. Porter, how you doing?
Good, buddy.
You going to orchestrate this thing?
How you doing, Waylon? Good to have you here, buddy.
Good to see you.
Travis, always great to have you.
Thank you.
You know, there's folks probably somewhere in the world that's watching television tonight that maybe has never heard these guys' biggest hits. To start our show, I'm going to have each one of them to sing you a verse and chorus of their biggest hit in history. Let's listen. Sorry, lonesome and scared. And you say you'd be happy if you could just come back home. Well, here's a quarter, call someone who cares. Call someone who listens, not give a damn. Every one of your sordid affairs. You come around here handed me none of your lies. Here's a quarter, call someone who cares. Yeah, here's a quarter, call someone who cares.
You remember your mom and daddy like me, Bear Day. Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm. He told you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day they were born. Straighten the curve, flatten the hill. Someday the mountain might give them, but the law never will. Making their way, the only way they know how. That's just a little bit more than the law would allow.
Come on! Joe Dippy!
How do you follow that?
Way down in Dixie, and met in high school in the 60s. Everyone knew it was love from the start. One July in the midnight hour, he climbed up on the water tower, stood on the rail and painted a 10-foot heart in John Deere green. On a hot summer night, he wrote Billy Bob Love Charlene and letters 3 foot high. And the whole town said the boy should have used red, but it looked good to Charlene in John Deere green.
I reached out my arms and I touched you,
yeah.
With soft words I whispered your name. I held your love on the tips of my fingers, but that was as close as I came. My eyes had a vision of sweetness, yielding beneath my command.
If you're gonna do it that way.
I held you right on the tips of my fingers, but I let you slip right through my hands. Yes, I let you slip right through my hands. Thank you.
y'all like it so far? Woo! You know, I don't remember ever in my 40 years in country music being on the stage with more talent than is right here tonight. And we have, I'm not going to do much talking, we got a lot of things planned for you. Right now, these all four of these guys had this one song. And Waylon recorded it first. Joe had it on hold. Steve had it on hold. They're still holding it. And Waylon recorded, and this guy here recorded, become a giant hit. And I want to ask him to do that for us, where corn don't grow.
Well, like so many other things, thank you. Like so many other things in my life, this guy sitting over here on my right has been an inspiration to me on practically everything I've done in my career. I've tried to copy him, and I just tell you,
leave my songs alone.
This is one that I got the entire blueprint for the way we record this from Waylon ago.
As we sat on the front porch of that old gray house where I was born, staring at the dusty fields where my daddy worked hard every day, I think it kind of hurt it when I said, "Daddy, there's a lot that I don't know. But don't you ever dream about a life where corn don't grow." Well, he sat there at the time, staring in his favorite coffee cup. I saw a storm of mixed emotion in his eyes when he looked up. He said, "Son, I know the new age. It seems like this whole world is turning slow. And you think you'll find the answer to it all where corn don't grow. Our times are real. There's dusty fields no matter where you go. And you may change your mind somewhere to hide where corn don't grow. I'll beg it, Steve." Back in the house, I was only 17, but I thought that I knew more than I do now. Well, I can't say he didn't warn me, this city life's a hard road to hold. Ain't it funny how dreams turn around where corn don't grow? Hard times are real, there's dusty fields no matter where you go. Son, you may change your mind, cause the weeds are high where corn don't grow. Son, you may change your mind, the weeds are high where corn don't grow. Great thrill. We're going to be right back after this good word, and I'm going to join these two guys over here, and they've got another great one picked out. Be back with you in just a moment.
Our great guitar pull continues. Here's Porter.
I mentioned this great concert tonight and told me they planned to be here. The ones that weren't, I had two more friends that I had invited to be a part of this tonight. We were going to have six of them out here. One of them is in Portland, Oregon tonight, which is Vince Gill. Let's dedicate this to him. And the other one is Marty Stewart, and he's in lonely West Virginia, son.
He's in Wheeling tonight. He's never lonely where Marty is.
He's right.
He's getting a Wheeling feeling in the Wheeling.
Yeah. I asked these guys to do one of their favorite songs. Boy, this is a great one, too. Steve?
I think Joe and I, we kind of agree this is definitely one of our favorites.
Most definitely. Right. If you'll tell me the words, I'll have
Well, just because I ask a friend about her. Just because I spoke her name somewhere. Just because I rang her number by mistake today. She thinks I still care.
All right, Joe.
Just because I haunt the same old places where the memory of her lingers everywhere. Just because I'm not the happy guy I used to be. She thinks I still care. Oh, if she's happy thinking I still need her, then let that silly notion bring her tears. Oh, how did she ever get so foolish? Oh, where did she get such an Well, just because I ask a friend about her. Just because I spoke her name somewhere. Just because I saw her then when all the pieces. She thinks I still care. Yet she thinks I still care.
Boy. Now, that's what I'd call dangerously good. I ain't kidding you. Wonderful job, boys. Thank you. You know, Travis mentioned a while ago what a creator this guy is here. He really has done a lot for country music, music in general. He's a great creative man. And this is a song that I've always loved from the time it came out, and it was a number one record. How about Good Hearted Woman there? Five minutes. Yeah, son.
You're the one in the wrong key. Let me slow it down a little bit. That's Willie Nelson's style.
A long time forgotten, the dream of the spell. A good life he promised ain't what she's living today.
No.
But she never complains of the bad times or the bad things he's done.
What do you think you're doing?
Good times and good times to come. She's a good-hearted woman in love with good time and man. She loves him in spite of his ways. She don't understand.
and laughter, they're gonna pass through this world hand in hand. A good-hearted woman loving a good time.
Folks, we're going to have to take another break here. We'll be right back in a minute. Boy, this is outstanding, guys. Well, lots of fun. Be right back with you right after this.
Oh, I'm not believing this. Let's go back to center stage.
These guys are not only wonderful stars and great singers, but they're such great guys to go along with it. Every one of them was so thrilled when we set this up for them to be here tonight. Last year, or year before last, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Year before last, we did one of these. Travis Tritt sung a Johnny Cash song that was just, I mean, it was unbelievable. I want to get him to do some of it tonight for you.